This is the Cole Memo. I am your host, Cole Preston. In this episode, I'll be playing a speech that was given by attorney Rod Kite. The speech was entitled, A New Vision for Cannabis Reform. During the speech, Mr. Kite discusses a new vision of cannabis reform to address the current failing system in the United States. You might recognize Rod from episode number 76 of The Cole Memo. Every episode of The Cole Memo is released in audio, video, and transcript format. To find the transcript, audio, or video version of any episode, please refer to the description of the episode that you're listening to now. Within that description, you can find a link that will take you to our website, which will display the transcript for this episode and platforms where you can find this episode in audio or video formats. If you're unable to locate the episode description on whichever platform you're listening from, simply take note of the episode number and visit thecolememo.com. From there, you can use the search functionality to find the corresponding episode, and then you'll be able to access the audio, video, and transcript version of that episode. You might also find any links that I reference during this episode so that you might be able to do your own research. For example, I'll have a link to the episode that I mentioned that Rod appeared on in the past. I'll also have a link to the video that I'm displaying itself. If you're not listening to this episode of The Cole Memo on Patreon, then you are listening to this episode later than our patrons. To become a patron, go to thecolememo.com/Patreon. It's a great way to support our show. It only costs $3 a month, and it allows you to get immediate access to our episodes as they release. Another great way to support our show is by going to thecolememo.com/support. You can make a one-time, monthly, or yearly contribution of your choosing. And I just want to give a shout-out to Tom G, who recently made a contribution. Once again, you can go to thecolememo.com/support to make that contribution. This show is brought to you by listeners like you. It costs a lot to do this show between equipment fees, hosting fees, traveling fees, etc. I'm hoping to do some traveling this summer. So if you're able to help in that, once again, thecolememo.com/support. I want to be clear though, one of the best ways to support our show is absolutely free. Subscribe to or follow our show. Leave us a positive review from wherever you're listening to us from. Favorite this episode, give it a thumbs up, leave a comment, or share it with your best friend. Your engagement and support is appreciated. Today is April 24th, 2024. Enjoy this episode of The Cole Memo.
Cannabis is on the wrong path. I'm going to present a new vision for cannabis reform, one that's informed by hemp. I'm going to discuss what I call the three pillars approach to hemp policy and regulation. But I want to make it clear that this approach is useful for the cannabis and cannabinoid industry as a whole, including what we now divide into the hemp and the marijuana sectors. The three pillar approach will enable the hemp industry, and if eventually taken to its logical extreme, the entire cannabis industry, safely, legally, and efficiently produce and distribute cannabis products throughout the U.S. and the world to a rapidly expanding market of cannabis consumers. Now, importantly, the three-pillar approach provides a path forward from the seemingly intractable issues regarding intoxication, access by minors, and quality control that are passionately debated everywhere from LinkedIn to legislative floors throughout the country. This approach is going to do so without getting mired in the industry-stifling overregulation and complexity that we see with the current marijuana industry or with the prohibition-focused direction that we see many states taking with respect to hemp right now. My message today is that the future of cannabis exists right here, right now. We just have to open our eyes and see it. The three-pillar approach that I propose is going to support and nurture the rapidly expanding cannabis industry while providing appropriate protections for consumers. Now, throughout my talk today, I'm going to be speaking about hemp, but it's important to understand that I'm ultimately discussing the future of cannabis itself. Let's make sure we're clear on this. Hemp is cannabis. It's not the different plant. And under the federal law and the laws of 50 states, cannabis has been divided arbitrarily into two categories, legal hemp and illegal marijuana. Now, this artificial distinction has served an important purpose, to be sure, the most important of which has been to legalize cannabis at the federal level and also to normalize cannabinoid use. But this division will eventually cease to exist, and we have a fleeting opportunity, again, right now, to steer the direction that cannabis policy is going to take as a whole for the next several decades. So while I'm talking today, keep in mind that hemp is cannabis and that what's good for hemp now is good for cannabis tomorrow. As a cannabis lawyer, I'm often asked, "Hey Rod, when is cannabis going to be legalized?" To which I usually respond, "It already is." Cannabis in the form of industrial hemp was legalized in 2014, and cannabis legalization was expanded in 2018 when Congress dropped the industrial prefix and completely revamped the definition of hemp to include the cannabis plant and, quote, any part of that plant, including the seeds and all derivatives, extracts, cannabinoids, isomers, acids, salts, and salts of isomers with a delta-9 THC concentration not exceeding 0.3% by dry weight. Most people in this room can probably cite that definition from memory, right? Sitting here today, all cannabis containing no more than 0.3% delta-9 THC has been removed from the Federal Controlled Substances Act. The DEA and several courts have confirmed that this descheduling includes cannabis products, provided that their delta-9 levels do not exceed 0.3%. Illegal marijuana, which used to include all cannabis except for the stalks and the non-germinating seeds, is now relegated solely to cannabis and cannabis products containing more than 0.3% delta-9. This is not much of an obstacle, since the cannabis plant itself does not produce much in the way of delta-9 THC. In fact, it's not a stretch to say that the 2018 Farm Bill almost completely descheduled cannabis. For example, in my home state of North Carolina, which is a very good hemp state, but one with literally zero marijuana reform, I can legally purchase any type of cannabis product that one could want. In fact, I have a wider array of choices for both the products themselves and the distribution channels that sell them in North Carolina than here in Colorado, or in any state on the West Coast, all of which are commonly associated with progressive cannabis policy. So consider this as you watch the entire country breathlessly awaiting the possible rescheduling of marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. So yes, all cannabis needs to be completely descheduled at the federal level. But what people fail to realize is that we are, for all intents and purposes, almost there. And our challenge now is to preserve what we have obtained, by which I mean the functional descheduling of cannabis through hemp, while charting a path forward that's going to serve all interests, including the industry, consumers, researchers, policymakers, regulators, and even concerned parents and educators. And to that end, I propose the three-pillar approach to hemp regulation, which I believe will unite and steer not only the hemp industry, but eventually the entire cannabis industry. Now, a solution necessarily presupposes a problem. So before discussing the three-pillar solution, I'm going to articulate the problems it addresses. The hemp industry is widely and routinely called out about a number of problematic issues. Some are real, and others are red herrings. According to detractors, the hemp industry aggressively takes advantage of an unextended legal loophole to produce and distribute poorly manufactured, intoxicating cannabinoid products, many of which are synthetic, throughout the U.S. to uninformed individuals, including kids, at gas stations and online, and that this has caused a public health crisis and placed the legal cannabis industry, by which they mean the marijuana sector, in economic distress, while placing the legitimate hemp industry, by which they mean the fiber and grain sector, in jeopardy of having the current hemp laws rolled back and thus losing all of the hard-fought ground they've achieved. Now, does that description adequately capture the sentiment that the hemp industry faces today by many sectors? Now, although widespread, most of these claims are patently false. To begin with, hemp companies, by and large, produce safe products, and in fact, many of those companies are represented here today. Additionally, the term synthetic is used as a proxy for bad or toxic products, but the reality is that the plant itself creates the cascade of cannabinoids it produces through biosynthetic processes. You may be aware that much of the caffeine we consume in the United States in products such as sodas and energy drinks is not from the coffee bean, but rather is synthetically manufactured in China in mostly unregulated circumstances using dangerous chemicals, but you don't see breathless media reports about that or passionate legislators denouncing it. And as for the argument that the Farm Bill did not intend to legalize intoxicating hemp, this claim is totally unsubstantiated, and from a legal standpoint, it's irrelevant, since the intent of a lawmaking body comes into play only if the statute is ambiguous. The Farm Bill is anything but. Its definition of hemp is plain and clear. In fact, if Congress only intended for hemp to be used for industrial purposes, then why did it drop the term industrial from the name in 2018? And why does the definition use a litany of highly specific scientific terms regarding compounds, including ones that cause intoxication, that we ingest? And what about those marijuana companies that are complaining about unfair competition? They have the same right to enter the hemp sector as anyone in this room. Many are doing just that. And moreover, why would we want to take down the hemp industry, which is now larger than the marijuana industry, just to support entrenched interests and to prop up failing policies? And finally, no one is trying to curb the production of hemp fiber or grain. In fact, most legislative proposals at the state and federal level seek to increase and to incentivize it. Now, all that being said, some of the negative claims about hemp and the hemp industry are undeniably true. There are bad actors, bad products, minors with access, adults taking products that they know nothing about, having bad experiences, hospital visits, and an overarching concern about a lack of regulation for a growing industry. And the fact is that the hemp industry has problems that need to be addressed. Even with the unsubstantiated claims that are more in the nature of reefer madness hysteria than real issues, the hemp industry is losing a public relations war. A proper regulatory policy going forward will solve both the real problems and also the public relations problems that the hemp industry faces. So let's turn now to the three pillars approach to hemp regulation. As its name suggests, this model focuses on three distinct zones of regulation. One, controlling access by minors. Two, quality control. And three, proper labeling and marketing. You'll notice that none of the three pillars addresses intoxication. And this is because attempting to regulate hemp products based on the capacity to intoxicate is the wrong approach. It's a classic fool's errand. To begin, it's impossible to define intoxication in a way that's workable from a legal or a regulatory standpoint. I mean, what does it mean to be intoxicated? We all sort of know, right? But attempting to actually define it is necessarily impossible, and in doing so creates all sorts of unintended consequences. Focusing on intoxication is, in fact, what perpetuates the reefer madness hysteria of the 20th century. It promotes a phobia of cannabis intoxication as somehow different in kind or form and more dangerous even than intoxication by alcohol or caffeine or tobacco or sugar or any number of commonly used medications. From a legal and a policy standpoint, attempting to eliminate or control intoxication by redefining hemp or prohibiting an entire class of hemp products or by limiting the allowed milligrams of THC and all other compounds is unworkable, and it amounts to a nanny state method of addressing an issue that should instead be based on an adult's personal preference. So rather than regulating hemp and its products on intoxication, hemp regulation should be focused on the three zones that I mentioned earlier: controlling access by minors, quality control, and proper labeling and marketing. And as you'll see, it addresses the intoxication issue without having to focus on it or even to define it. Pillar one. We should strictly control access by minors to hemp products. Now, should the age be 18 or should it be 21? Should a minor be able to obtain hemp products with parental consent? What are the best age-gating practices? These are all good questions. These are the types of questions that are appropriate for us as an industry and as a society to debate and eventually resolve through legislative and regulatory actions. But the thing that we can all agree on is that minors should not have unfettered access to hemp products. You might ask, but what about non-intoxicating hemp products? They should also be subject to age gating. This is an across-the-board issue. To begin with, we do not yet have sufficient information about any specific cannabinoid to know how it develops, how it affects developing brains. The fact that a cannabinoid may or may not be intoxicating might or might not have any relevance to its effect on developing brains. We simply don't have that information yet. And also, distinguishing based on intoxication drags us right back into the mire of regulation based on intoxication rather than the more straightforward approach that I'm proposing. So if you believe that minors should be able to access hemp products with parental consent, something that I personally believe in, then that's something that we can address in regulations. But all hemp products should be subject to age gating, because ultimately, if a company's profitability and market share is based on selling hemp products to minors, well, then maybe that company should rethink its market plan. Aside from hemp seed and hemp seed oil, all hemp products that people ingest or inhale should be subject to age gating. It just makes sense. Pillar two, we should require quality control for production and manufacturing of hemp and hemp products. By this, I mean manufacturers should have to comply with GMP and other objective quality standards. Experts are currently drawing up, discussing, and promoting these types of standards. And contrary to shrill news reports, many of the best hemp companies in the world, including people who represent those companies here today, are regulating themselves in this way and already meeting objective quality standards. The specific standards we eventually land on and implement are up for discussion, of course, but the need for objective quality standards is non-negotiable. This will ensure that products do not contain contaminants, that they're consistent in their ingredients and formulations, and most importantly, that they're safe. Objective quality standards will also help the industry overcome its reputation for promoting so-called synthetic products. So, for example, Delta-8 THC has been studied clinically since the 1980s. The primary issue with Delta-8 is not Delta-8 itself, or even the fact that it's created synthetically from CBD. As I mentioned earlier, most of the caffeine we ingest is created synthetically. Rather, the issue is that many Delta-8 products on the market were not properly manufactured, leaving behind an array of other compounds and solvents in the final products. And similarly, there are no overarching regulations about hemp production with respect to the use of pesticides, fertilizers, and the presence of mold, mildew, mycotoxins, etc. in the flowers and biomass. Objective production and manufacturing regulations focused on consumer safety will ensure that no one ever has to worry about their hemp products being contaminated, just as we don't have to worry right now about other products that we commonly consume being contaminated. Pillar three, we should require informative, appropriate, and standardized labeling and marketing of hemp products. This will ensure that consumers are adequately informed about the products they're purchasing and using. Consumers should know exactly what ingredients are in a product and also the concentrations of those ingredients. Additionally, consumers should know if a product will likely cause impairment and/or fail a drug test. By the way, this is where the issue of intoxication is properly addressed, not in prohibitions, not in milligram caps or convoluted definitions, but rather via a straightforward disclosure so that consumers are properly and adequately informed about what they choose to consume. The same is true for advertising and marketing, and in a similar vein, individual states should not control or regulate labeling and marketing. This is an important point that often gets lost in the states' rights and let the states decide arguments that we often hear from cannabis industry advocates. The hemp industry deserves national objective standards and labeling regulation, just like every other consumer product. The current situation where hemp companies must create compliant labels for every single state, and where states are beginning to create their own state-specific quality standards, is inefficient, unnecessary, and fails to address the fact that, well, unlike the marijuana industry, the hemp industry operates on a national scale. The three-pillar approach allows adults to make an informed decision about the products they choose to purchase and consume while limiting access by minors and sidestepping the impossible task of defining and regulating products based on their potential to cause intoxication. To use an alcohol comparison, an adult can purchase a low-alcohol session beer, a nice bottle of wine, or a handle of hard liquor. The choice of potency is left up to the adult consumer, who can rest assured that the products are properly manufactured and that the label will provide sufficient information about the alcohol content and other ingredients to help her make an informed decision about what to purchase and how much to consume. Of course, alcohol causes both intoxication and a host of other health problems, and the fact that it's lawfully and widely available across many distribution platforms, including convenience stores, while hemp products are being decried as a public health crisis, is frankly insane. With the exception of age gating, which can be state specific, the three-pronged approach, three-pillar approach, will ultimately require a federal level solution. Now don't cringe, I get it. But with the notable exception of the Farm Bill itself, the feds have been particularly unhelpful so far with the federal with the hemp industry. But to be clear, I'm not talking about the federal government doing anything to restrict access to legal cannabis in the form of hemp. The fact is that when it comes to quality control for the production and manufacturing of hemp products and for their labeling, the hemp industry is unfairly forced to struggle with the varying laws and regulations of 50 different states. And additionally, as hemp becomes more and more normalized, it's incumbent for it to be treated just like any other consumer product. So what will the three-pillar approach mean for hemp and ultimately for cannabis as a whole? We can see glimmers of that world right now. First, a consumer in a hemp-friendly state has typically more options than her contemporary in a marijuana state. Additionally, people who want to participate in the cannabis industry face significantly lower barriers and fewer obstacles to entry in the hemp sector than in the marijuana market. And importantly, since hemp is federally lawful, hemp businesses can sell and promote their products across state and international lines, take normal tax deductions, enjoy easy access to banking, insurance, and other financial services, advertise their products on most major platforms, and not have the heavy weight of possible federal prosecution constantly dangling over their heads. Now, isn't this a desirable version of cannabis legalization? And at this point, as we move towards a conclusion, I'd like to comment about quickly about the sale of hemp products in convenience stores. I frequently hear the claim that hemp products are sold in convenience stores used as an argument about how bad and unregulated the hemp industry is. This is a red herring. Of all the possible distribution outlets for hemp products, convenience stores are among the best. Think about it. For decades, convenience stores have been selling highly regulated products such as alcohol and tobacco that are subject to strict age gating. Now, to be clear, and before all my hemp dispensary clients tar and feather me, I'm not a fan, so to speak, of convenience stores. What I'm in favor of is all properly regulated distribution channels, from e-commerce sites to boutique hemp health stores to, yes, convenience stores and other retail establishments. Just like my alcohol example, there are many different retail options for a bottle of wine, each of which serves a different purpose. The same is currently true and should remain true for hemp and hemp products. Don't buy into the reefer madness hype. There's a war that's raging against hemp in legislatures across the country, on all major social media platforms, and by misguided regulators and law enforcement agencies. But this goes deeper than hemp. At stake is the future of cannabis reform in the United States, the ability for small businesses to thrive in an emerging market, and the right for adults to make their own determination about what they choose to ingest. The choices we make today will impact the cannabis industry, by which I mean both the hemp and the marijuana sectors, for decades. If we successfully promote regulations that address age gating, quality control, and proper labeling, we don't need to concern ourselves with intoxication or any overreaching regulations and blood-sucking tax regimes that are currently strangling the marijuana industry. Nor do we have to worry about squeezing small businesses out of the industry. The hemp sector of the cannabis industry, including those of us here today, are the vanguard for the future of cannabis policy. As the DEA seems to be balking at even a modest rescheduling of marijuana to Schedule 3, hemp stands as the new path forward for cannabis reform. Hemp is cannabis, and it is the future of the cannabis industry. Thank you.